and the world. I'm John Batchelor. To Europe, to Berlin, Germany, to observe the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, head of the social political party known as the Socialist Democrats, making remarks in these last days about Ukraine conflict. On the one hand, Ukraine conflict now will include German-made weapons of war, main battle tanks. Not only from Germany, we understand, but also from countries that have been clients of Germany buying these tanks. Poland and Finland are mentioned. Spain is mentioned. This change by the chancellor is significant in that at the same time he said no warplanes. He said it again, no warplanes, because there is conversation now about F-16s in Poland going to Ukraine or French warplanes going to Ukraine. At the same time, the president of the United States, day by day, there is changing in directions, says no F-16s for Ukraine. All of this is what the chancellor speaks of when he says he does not want to participate in an arms race. The chancellor has been in South America these last days looking for business, and he's met various successes, but at the same time, different voices in South America also weigh in on the matter of Ukraine conflict. To summarize, Lula da Silva says he will not participate in sending weapons of war into the conflict zone. Chile, on the other hand, the new president, Gabriel Boric, says that he's sympathetic to freedom and that Chile will participate in demining or post-war conditions. At the same time, I believe Argentina has not in any fashion indicated it will participate in Ukraine conflict. All this adds up to a myriad of opinions for Germany. And I welcome Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, who is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, because Judy these last weeks has been doing us the favor of corralling these many opinions. And now we focus on Olaf Scholz because his changing directions very much indicate the changing directions of his party for decades. Judy, a very good day to you. Beg pardon the preface, but the news is like a waterfall. You just jump in and do the best you can. Olaf Scholz represents Socialist Democrats, and they have a history of Ostpolitik. What does that mean, and what does it mean about the decisions that the chancellor is now making? Good evening to you.
Thank you very much, John, for having me on your great show. Okay, that was some introduction. We have to dissect this. Let's deal very quickly with Ostpolitik. It was a social democratic party venture started in the 1960s. It was based in the idea of reaching out to the former Soviet Union, making Europe stable, but on the basis of a divided Europe, by the way, and making this stability more enhanced by reaching out to Russia politically, but also through economic and trade topics, particularly energy. But the whole idea of Ostpolitik was to try to build up some confidence with the Soviet Union, while at the same time, I must admit, downplaying the Soviet Union's control over what was then communist Eastern Europe. And this Ostpolitik is now thrown out the window because of the Ukraine war and because of the change that is happening inside the Social Democratic Party, led by Olaf Scholz, who realizes that Ostpolitik is finished unless it's going to be reinvented after the war. And at the moment, now the concentration is how to defend Ukraine. What's completely absent from all of this is how this war is going to end.
The history of the Socialist Democrats is a fascination because there are strains here that are a way of recapitulating Europe in the last 60, 70 years since the war. Willy Brandt and Helmut Schmidt led the Socialist Democrats. Were they Ostpolitik inventors? Were they pacifists in some fashion that influences Olaf Scholz's party today?
Well, this Social Democratic Party was actually quite divided. I mean, you had the old ideologues out of guilt and out of the need for stability and cooperation with the Soviet Union. They were leading the herd, so to speak. And this was led by Willy Brandt and his chief ideologist, Egon Bahr. But when it came to the whole question of stability in Europe, and when the Soviet Union threatened to put in SS-20 missiles in communist Eastern Germany, what it then was, Helmut Schmidt the Social Democratic Chancellor, actually, instead of bowing to the huge pacifist demonstrations and anti-American demonstrations, went ahead and deployed, located the US Pershing missiles in West Germany. It was an extraordinary decision. He did it, demanded a huge amount of courage. He knew what was at stake, the defense of Western Europe. And actually, that decision did cost him in the sense that he was demonized internally by the SPD, by the Social Democrats, for doing this. So these splits are always there and they continue to this day. But certainly one element of the Ostpolitikers are still alive, very much in Eastern Germany. Another element of the pragmatism, American defending the stability of Europe, is still there too. The tensions are still there.
I learned from you that the SPD is not alone in endorsing Ostpolitik. It was joined by the Christian Democrats and the Christian Social Union. So this was a wide popular decision, for example, to work with Russia to build Nord Stream 1. And therefore, today, it is not all finger-pointing at the SPD for dragging its feet. It's also the Christian Democrats. Are they weighing in on these decisions these days?
I think this is a very important point you made. The interesting thing is that when even Angela Merkel was chancellor from 2005 until quite recently, she endorsed this Ostpolitik more or less. This was a CDU thing. However, over the years since 1962, 63, when the Berlin Wall was built, the CDU philosophy was the reunification of Germany. This was something that the Social Democrats did not fully endorse. But nevertheless, when it came to trade, when it came to reaching out to Russia, remember the former conservative Christian Democrat Union Chancellor Helmut Kohl embracing Soviet leaders and Gorbachev and so on. Their key was to always try to have Russia in the camp, regardless of the motives. But at the end of the day, all the elites have to carry the responsibility for their relations with Russia and for continuing with this extraordinarily short-sighted project, the Nord Stream gas pipeline, which made Germany and de facto Europe dependent on Russian gas.
And there were warning voices at the time, but I understand a lot of mistakes lead to a war. Judy, I understand also from reporting that Russia has been, I think the word is used as vitriolic, especially about Chancellor Scholz's opinion. Is Russia threatening Germany in some new fashion right now? Is there an intimidation going on?
The decision by Chancellor Scholz to agree to send the Leopards gave huge, wonderful meat for these extraordinary vitriolic commentators on Russian state television, which I look at regularly, nearly every night. And they just gave an excuse to confirm, oh, this is Russia, Nazism, fascism, and everything like this. But frankly, Russia is in no position to, this isn't about attacking Germany. I think what deep down is that Russia has actually lost Europe's most important ally, and that is Germany. It was Germany that did all these energy deals. It was Germany that could be the broker. And now, actually, Russia realizes that they've lost Germany as the player in the EU that could influence the policy towards Russia. So this is a big setback for Russia, actually.
You report also that the road ahead is uncharted for the chancellor, for his party, for the Bundestag, without German-Russian relations in any fashion. What does the future behold? Is there a policy underway, under development, how to regard Russia in the year 2050, in the year 2100? Do they project like that, Judy?
No, they're not projecting like this. It's interesting they're projecting more on how they see China, actually. But Russia, it is very important that they should have started this discussion or this internal debate on how to deal with Russia. It's just not the post-Putin Russia. It's the post-Ukraine war. It's how to deal with civil society, the new generation, the huge problems facing Russia, demography, health, infrastructure, the whole degradation of many aspects of the Russian society. And as far as I know, the think tanks and some of the great Russian experts here in Germany are thinking about the day after, but there isn't yet a policy coming from the Chancellery or from the Foreign Ministry on what will the day after look or how Germany can influence it.
Is there a peacemaking voice in the SPD or in the Bundestag, someone speaking out saying nothing will be accomplished by fighting this war? Does Olaf Scholz have a dialogue with anyone who is, in this country, we would call dovish?
You see, the opinion is split in Germany, for instance, over the Leopard tanks. And the Linke Party, the far left, they're not that far left, but they're quite far, they're leftish. You know, they say, we don't want any more war. We've got to have a dialogue with Russia. We need negotiations. The AfD, the far right, Alternative for Germany, they don't like any of this at all. But the thing is, when you listen to these, the far right and the far left, they don't come up with any concrete, reasonable, practical options about how to end this war. It's all very well criticizing the government. It's all very well criticizing the war, but come up with the options. Come up with strategic options and sensible options that the elites, but that the society can buy into, that the other European member states can buy into. This is a very important point. I often wonder who among the member states now are actually thinking about how to even begin negotiations. At what stage do you do it? And maybe there are behind the scenes negotiations going on, but I do not know.
Judy Dempsey is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. She is in Berlin. She keeps the website for Carnegie, and you can sign up for Strategic Europe documents. We're going to turn to one of those documents that we began to discuss last week about autonomy, European autonomy. That means leadership without consulting with Washington in some fashion right away when we come back. But it's all influenced by the economy, so that also is part of this war fighting. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.